We've never been more connected, yet somehow more people than ever feel completely alone. So the real question is, why is that happening and how do we fix it? Today, we're talking about something that affects more people than we realize, loneliness. Not just being alone, but feeling disconnected, even when you're surrounded by people, technology, and constant communication. I'm joined today with Alexandra Goldman, who focuses on strategies for solving both social and individual loneliness and how the connection that technology and our nervous system all play in a role of how we feel. You know, this is going to be a conversation that's going to help you understand what's really going on and, more importantly, what you can actually do about it. Alexandra, I am so excited to have you on the show today. I'd like to welcome you to the show. This is a topic that is so well deserved and needed, and I'm so glad that you came on the show today to discuss this. So, you know, let's start here. Why do you think so many people today feel lonely even when they're not physically alone?
That's a great question. Well, first, Stacey, thank you so much for having me on the show.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, so loneliness is, if we just jump into the brain and look at what loneliness is feeling scared, essentially. There's more to it, but if you are lonely, it is a state of heightened unsafety, felt unsafety.
Right.
And so things that make us feel unsafe also tend to make us feel lonely, because if you feel unsafe, one of your first instincts is to identify threats around you.
Right.
To try to separate and distance yourself from those threats. So the things in our lives that make us feel unsafe or that put us into that stress response,
yeah,
also tend to lead people to feel lonely. So there's that. So things like social media, doom scrolling activates a stress response in our brain. And people literally these days have higher average baseline cortisol levels, which is a good indicator of stress.
Yeah.
So these people have higher stress and therefore they feel more unsafe. Therefore, they feel less connected. And then we also live in a more individualistic culture. And in our individualistic culture, there's so much messaging around pursuing what's right for you.
Right.
A lot of the game theory around how we interact with others has gone from a place where feeling like we have so much in common with each other to feeling like I need to pursue what's right for me. That it's me against the world. And these two things are kind of a vicious cycle that reinforce each other.
What makes you so passionate about, you know, helping others that suffer in loneliness and other, you know, similar conditions?
Yeah, that's a great question. My freshman year of college, I went off to school. And from the outside, everything looked great. You know, I was doing well in school. But on the inside, I was kind of in this stress response where I felt overwhelmed and out of my comfort zone. I wound up spending almost all my freshman year kind of like watching a lot of YouTube videos. And I realized in retrospect that I was in this stress response. And that matters to me because I want people to know that you can be in this stress response. You can be dealing with loneliness without being aware of it.
Right.
There's also that science part of it about awareness of our own emotional state. And also, I think the things that make life worth living involve connection.
Yeah.
They involve taking risk. They involve play. And so much of those good things can only happen if you are either not feeling alone or you're willing to, you know, go against the grain of what your brain tells you to pursue if you're feeling.
Right. Now, what has changed in the way that we connect as humans?
So a lot of different things. The biggest, lowest hanging fruit is social media. The average young person spends roughly 5 hours a day on social media. And yeah, it's staggering. I mean, the young women even more, and the health impacts on young women are massive. So people have gone from interacting with on a one-on-one basis with people to essentially being a consumer of rapidly delivered information. I find the term social media very oxymoronic because it leads people to become more antisocial. And the effects on our nervous system of social media are basically Anytime your brain is shown something new that you didn't expect, your brain goes into a stress response.
Mm-hmm.
Then your brain tells you, okay, how do I respond to this? So you swipe or you kind of take an action. This gives your brain a slight feeling of control and predictability. And so a lot of young people have essentially become addicted to the feeling of control and detachment and predictability that social media provides.
Right.
The net effect is young people are kind of ground zero for how people are being impacted by social media.
Right.
But it's also, you know, shifts to working from home, shifts in values. You can look at, there's great books on this, like Bowling Alone, that reveals that way before social media, people became way less involved in their community religious groups or community groups in general.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, a lot of the reasons why we do this is because it feels safer when we're disconnected from things.
Right.
The irony being that the more you disconnect yourself from things, the more unsafe you feel. So the things that we do that tell us that we should do these things to feel safe are counterproductive. So largely it's technology that's changed these things. And of course, on the forefront of this now is AI, which I like calling a certainty machine. You know, a lot of young people are getting into relationships with AI or using it to simulate friendship because there's no risk.
Yeah.
But we need risk. Like, humans thrive. Like, you cannot thrive if you are not exposing yourself to the right kind of risk.
Right. That's so true. Now, do you think that this is getting worse? You know, as you've been doing more research and as you've been talking to more people, have you seen that we become worse as we grow?
So, yes and no. I think the threats and the dangers are becoming more elaborate and nuanced and sophisticated. So there's more tools out there that are attractive to people as alternatives to relationships that use AI.
Right.
But at the same time, thankfully, we are in this renaissance of awareness of the importance of these issues.
Right.
And so I'm hopeful, but if you are, let's say you're just not aware of these issues, the probability of your mental health getting worse because you are engaging in the things that your brain tells you are the sensible things to do,
yeah,
like net, you're probably going to wind up more unhappy unless we can push back. But our tools for pushing back and our understanding of the science is leaps and bounds above what it was even a couple of years ago.
Now, we're constantly connected through our phones, social media, messaging. So why isn't that translated into real conversation?
So the interesting thing is we think about it as connection.
Mm-hmm.
But imagine you took someone, you have two people. One person is out and they're having a conversation with friends.
Right.
The other person, like, writes a letter and puts that letter in a mailbox. Which of those people is more connected? The person who is spending time with friends.
Right.
In order to feel connected, you need to be present with people.
Yes.
There is no amount. And the other thing is, a lot of the people who built these platforms that simulate connection, like Instagram or dating apps or social media in general, were people who had discomfort interacting in person.
Yeah.
So a lot of the problems that they're solving are that they do not like being connected. They like feeling connected, but they need to feel at a distance in order to feel safe.
Yeah.
So these, most of the things that people use to simulate connection are kind of like pale imposters of that.
Right.
And we need the real thing. Like, we can't eat cardboard cutouts of food.
Yeah.
However much of it we have in our life. You can have, you know, a giant box of cardboard cutouts of food. And we're, you know, why aren't you happy with this nearly food that you have?
No, yeah.
You need real food. You need real connection.
That's so true. Now, what are people misunderstanding about communication versus real connection?
Yeah, that's a really great question. The first is, people tend to think that communication that simply exchanging words involves communication. Being exposed to someone's Instagram story, leaving a comment, that is true. Communication is a much, there's different ways to define it, right? But it is a thing that happens where you are taking an action, someone gets information. Connection is not about simply exchanging information. Right. It's about how your nervous system responds. And a good example would be, I don't know if you've heard the term like a parasocial relationship, but you know, you can follow an influencer on Instagram and you can leave comments on things.
Yeah.
Your brain is telling you that you are connected to them. But in reality, it is not a real relationship.
Right.
It requires relationship. And that can't be at a distance. Like,
right.
You can, I mean, let's say you have my brother lives in Miami. He's one of my best friends. Of course, we talk over the phone, but that is not our relationship. It is simply a context in which that happens. So that's one thing that people misunderstand, that all communication is connection.
Right.
The second thing is that, and I honestly think this is probably the biggest thing, that people think that the more you use social media, the more connected you feel. And that the thing that's addictive about social media is that you're connecting and that we like connection.
Right.
And shouldn't we like connection? And if connection is good, shouldn't using social media, shouldn't we want to use it? So why should we feel bad about compulsively using it? But
right.
the core mechanism underlying, you know, compulsive social media use is not connection. It's actually disconnection. It puts your nervous system into a stress response. And the weird thing is that, and sorry if I'm going on, but the weird thing is our bodies actually like being stressed.
Yeah.
Because if you're stressed, it means that you're aware of something that could be a risk. And of course, we'd always rather be aware of something that could be a risk.
Right.
Or be like closing your eyes and walking through a field full of lions.
Yeah.
We would rather be stressed. So our bodies like pursuing that stress. So the number one thing to sum up all of that that people don't understand is that we tend to use social media and technology to, particularly social media, to introduce stress to our systems that we can then numb.
Right.
Which is the opposite of connection, which is why it leads to loneliness, because it makes us feel stressed. So we distance ourselves. One of the other fascinating things is using social media and activating the stress response causes something called interoception to decrease. Interoception is our awareness of our own emotional state.
Right.
So the more you use social media, like if you're doom scrolling, you actually become less aware of how you feel. And so you're actually becoming less connected to yourself, which sadly helps us feel safer because disconnection is safety.
Right.
But of course, it's safety that backfires.
Yeah, for sure. Now, is technology helping us or is it quietly making things worse for us then?
I mean, I would say that it's making things worse if I had to pick. And the other thing that's important to distinguish is there's something called passive social media consumption
and
active consumption. Active consumption is where you are posting content and connecting with your friends. There are different reasons why that's not good, particularly for young women. It can really negatively impact self-esteem and body issues, and kind of controlling your image is really harmful to our well-being. But if you're connecting with your friends and you're not feeling judged and you're not worrying about that, that's great. Like, I have a lot of friends and I like seeing their stuff, and it's nice to stay roughly up to speed with them.
Right.
Passive social media consumption is seeing things made by people that you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just kind of straight up bad for our brains.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there is like valuable stuff of where you could be like learning about things. One of the other fascinating things is our brain does this thing called upward social comparison, where let's say you're on Instagram, you see an image of someone who's more attractive than you.
Right.
That content specifically puts your brain in a stress response, because your brain is like, wow, this person is successful. Our brain is like, so much of what our brain does is just try to identify how our culture defines success mm-hmm. and emulating that. You see someone who's more attractive than you, it stresses our brains out and it makes us, it literally tells us that we're not enough as we are and we should look for indicators of how to be more like this other person. So net technology is not good for us, particularly passive social network consumption. And really anything that compulsively leads you to develop a behavior, you can safely say that's not good for you.
Now, I just want to take a quick moment. If you're listening to this and this is resonating with you, make sure you follow the show right now, because every episode we bring to you is real conversations and practical strategies to help you improve your life, your mindset, and your relationships. Now, you actually talk about the nervous system and how it plays a role in this connection. Can you break that down in a simple way?
Sure. So there's different chemicals that our brains release in response to different stimuli, right? Mm-hmm. So let's say a tiger jumps out in front of you. It triggers this really fast stress response. And then there's other forms of stress response that are slower, right? So let's say you have a hard day at work, or you know, you're living in a community where there's like famine and everyone is stressed out. Yeah. That's a different thing. So there's like lots of these different processes that our brains essentially kick off in response to different things.
Right.
The neuroscience and some of that science is really just ways to pinpoint these are the things that our brains interpret a certain way, and then this is what happens. The mechanism for a lot of my research that's most important is cortisol, which is that slow building stress.
Yeah.
And how that kind of builds over time. And, you know, our brains, I also talk about like evolutionary psychology, which is, you know, we evolve to like live and thrive in certain ways, right? Like that's why we need relationships. That's why we like to play. It's all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
Our brains were not built to be constantly exposed to things that stress us out.
Yeah.
You know, if you see one tiger and your brain is like, oh, tiger, you respond to that and then you get away from the tiger and your brain's like, whoo, no more tiger, right? But a lot of this exposure to content essentially gets our body to go into the stress response and then maintain that stress response,
right,
which causes lots of changes in the body. It also, you know, this term brain rot,
mm-hmm.
it's actually a scientific phenomena. It's not, the term isn't the proper term for it, but
right.
You know, constant exposure to stress, like literally degrades parts of your prefrontal cortex, which are responsible for free will and, you know, conscious decision-making and self-awareness.
Yeah.
So the science is, there's a way more complicated stuff behind it, but it's really useful to just be able to distinguish, like, why do things impact us the way they do? And you don't need to nerd out on the science to accept that there's like an objective reality behind how things impact us.
Right. Now, how does loneliness actually affect us, like mentally and physically?
Yeah. So that's another area that's totally fascinating. Loneliness is a response that, you know, you can call it an emotion.
Yeah.
I think it's almost more useful to think about it as a sensation like hunger or thirst, because we don't think about hunger as an emotion, right?
Right.
It is a set of things that happen in the body mm-hmm. that tells us to take a certain action.
Right.
Loneliness is like that. There are physical indicators in the body, mm-hmm. like outside of just the brain. If you are lonely, it means you feel unsafe, because if you were lonely, it meant that you were either separated from your tribe, or maybe you did something that pissed off your tribe, and you really need to figure out how to fix those connections.
Yeah.
So if you are lonely, you feel unsafe. So there's that. And then there's also all of the processes that our brain tells us to do if we are lonely, like to seek out safety.
Mm-hmm.
The great irony, maybe the greatest irony in all of this, is that when people feel lonely, their brain tells them to seek out safety and reduce risk.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because if you were isolated in the jungle or in the savannah, your brain would say, okay, you know, I'm alone here, I should hide
mm-hmm.
and come up with a strategy. The ultimate irony is these days, most of the risks around us are social risks. So what lonely people do is they tend to isolate themselves further. So loneliness is a set of behaviors. It's a set of maladaptive behaviors. In other words, they're things that our brain does for good reasons, but in our modern world just kind of backfire.
Now, why do some people feel disconnected even when they have relationships?
Yeah, so there's a lot there. You know, if you are consuming a lot of social media content and your brain is, you're essentially teaching your brain to see what's wrong with you. A lot of people can become perfectionists. That's a really common thing where you're essentially, and this is where it goes from neuroscience to psychology, you're projecting some of those feelings of being imperfect onto other people around you.
Right.
And therefore you kind of push them away. Mm-hmm. Because you secretly think that you're not enough, even though you're not aware of that. So you push other people away. The other thing is if you're not feeling safe, your body is not in a state of pursuing connection.
Right.
So you can be around people, like you can have friends, but you can feel like there's a distance between you.
Right.
And one of the interesting things about loneliness is you can't necessarily determine loneliness from the outside. You know, it's a physiological thing, but you know, a lot of young people in particular, they have people that they spend time with, but also maybe you're not being honest with them.
Right.
Like a lot of people talk about vulnerability these days. I just talk about not hiding.
Right. Like,
connections are built on not hiding from other people.
Yes.
If you feel a certain way, but you don't feel like you can express that with someone else, you can feel lonely even if you have, from the outside, a good relationship.
That's so true. Now, let's get practical. Like, what are some of the common mistakes people make when they're trying to build connection?
Yeah, great question. First is to try to be more aware of why you are seeking out what you are seeking out.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are building connection because you feel lonely, that's good. You should be aware that you're lonely.
Right. But
you should also know that simply being with other people is not going to solve your loneliness.
Right.
So people think that spending time with others is the solution. That's not the case. And one thing that oftentimes happens is people have this transactional mindset. You know, you spend time with people, solves your loneliness. If you're only spending time with people to solve your own problem, you're not going to feel connected.
Right. Like,
connecting requires giving. And literally our brains go into this state where things called mirror neurons activate.
Mm-hmm.
Where we almost like simulate in our heads what's going on in other people's lives.
Right.
Be interested in other people. So that's one thing. The other thing is a lot of people mistake meeting friends for making friends.
Mm-hmm.
The research is really, really strong and really, really clear. Connection requires invested relationships.
Right.
You can't simply be meeting people and expect that to create meaning and connection in your life.
Right.
You need to be, I wish I could quote the exact study and the exact number. I think it's 90 hours that to make a real friend, you need to spend 90 hours with someone.
Wow.
Yeah. So a lot of people don't, you know, go through the right behavior because you have to invest in connection. You don't make it.
This
is the same thing with like a romantic relationship. You don't find a relationship.
Right.
You make it. So you have to play a really active role in that and make that your priority.
What about those people who are on Zoom and they develop these friendships on Zoom and they maybe hit that 90 mark? Is it the same thing when, you know, compared to someone that you're actually interacting with in the same room or maybe going out with?
That's a great question. So you can have meaningful friendships over Zoom, you know, like you can meet someone who you've never met before. Let's just theoretical situation. During the pandemic, you made this virtual pen pal somewhere who you talk over Zoom, right? And let's say every week you spend an hour with them.
Mm-hmm.
That would totally be an incredibly meaningful friendship and connection. And however, it can't be your only thing, right? It's important to have in-person relationships. The other thing that's really interesting is there's a difference between social isolation and loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
So social isolation is this like objective measure of how much time you're spending alone each week. or however, over a period of time. Loneliness is how you feel.
Yeah.
You don't actually, most people don't actually need to spend all that much time with people.
Yeah.
On a regular basis. It's not like you need to spend 5 hours a day with people having deep conversations, right? It can be, you know, like 3 hours a week with friends in addition to your daily life.
Right.
And that can take a big chunk out of that loneliness. And having friends over Zoom can certainly, or talking with family over the phone, you don't even need to see them. That does make a meaningful impact on our nervous systems and does help us feel.
Now, what actually pushes people further into loneliness without them realizing it?
That's a great question. The first is that when people, I mentioned this earlier, when people feel lonely, our brain tells us essentially to seek out safety, push ourselves further away from people.
Yeah.
It is an absolutely sensible, rational response in the sense that if you feel unsafe, you should seek out safety.
Right.
But that's where we need to draw the line between what our brain is telling us and what we should do.
Right.
There's like lots of different kinds of therapy that help with this. But if you are lonely, you should not be relying on your brain to just identify that you're lonely and to get you to change your behaviors. It can be a downward cycle because if you're doing the rational thing and just doing what your brain is telling you to do, you'll just wind up more lonely and being socializing will seem scarier. So you need to train yourself to take risks and to change your relationship with risks. And empathy is actually a huge part of that as well. One of the, this is my own personal philosophy and ideology that I'm about to talk about, is that if you are lonely, one of the best things that you can do to help yourself kind of shift your behavior is realize that so many other people are lonely as well.
Yeah.
You know, when you are going out and you're engaging with people, you are doing a good deed, being kind to them by giving them the opportunity to feel seen.
Right.
So the more you can shift out of focusing, and this part again is the science, the more you can shift out of focusing only on yourself, the easier it'll be to connect.
I love that. Now, if someone is listening right now and they feel disconnected, what's one simple step that they can take today to feel more connected?
First, figure out who in your life you already have that you can become more connected to. Let's say there are also common times in your life that people oftentimes become lonely. Like, let's say you move to a new city, right?
Right.
If you move to a new city, your friends are probably somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important to double down and be proactive and engage with the people who already matter to you, even if they're no longer around you.
Right.
Like you move to a new city, call your old friends, call your family, put that on your calendar, make sure that it happens.
Right.
So that's the number one thing. The other thing is just find opportunities to interact socially where you don't feel like it's going to be a giant stress, you know, like play in a rec league or just show up. Like if you're religious, go to services, something like that. Right.
Right.
You don't have to, just something that helps you feel like you have things in common with other people.
Right.
That helps you move in the right direction too.
Now, how can someone start building real meaningful relationships again?
Yeah. So it's all about steps in the right direction. You know, first thing is really important, just start moving your body and brain out of that constant stress response.
Yeah.
So identify the things that are putting you in that stress response. Like if you doom scroll on social media, like it's really important to just get rid of the things that are creating stress, because those things are telling you to not connect.
Right.
So step one. Step two, you know, invest in these foundational things like going to a community where you can just feel like you belong without needing to, like you don't have to go to an improv class that involves really taking risks, right? And build those relationships with people who you care about already, who already care about you. And then from there, start investing in friendships. You have to take risks. You have to be willing to strike up conversations. And, you know, you can develop some simple prompts for yourself that help you go from small talk to a more meaningful conversation.
Right.
One of the most important things is go to places where you're going to see the same people again and again.
Yes.
Like if you're religious and you go to church or synagogue or mosque or whatever, you know, see the same people and ask them a question each time. You don't need to get super deep right away.
Yeah.
And really invest in those things. The flip side of that is you need to commit to going to things again and again.
Right.
You can't expect to show up and make friends. These are just some of the best practices.
100%. Now, what's something small that somebody can make a big difference in?
Yeah. So ask, talk to people, you know, if you, let's say you're not lonely.
Right.
You know, it is a good deed to invite people in and engage people, you know,
right.
You can just talk to a stranger. You know, like let's say you're walking around or you're at a coffee shop, ask the barista a question, you know. One of the things that social media does and devices do is they get us to kind of retreat from the world. So the more that you can do to just engage with the world and engage with the people around you,
yeah.
The more you de-risk those behaviors for others as well, the more you set an example. So
right.
If you are already connected, be a leader and set a strong example.
Right. I love that. Now, if you can change, you know, the way people think about connection, what's the one thing that you would want them to understand?
I think a lot of people, when they think about connection, they think about it as this really touchy-feely thing where, you know, like I'm a man. If like a lot of times men, they think, oh, connection, like that's for like I'm supposed to be self-reliant and strong. For me, I think that narrative is exactly the opposite. People who insist upon being able to do things on their own are weak.
Yeah.
They're weak because they are not able to tolerate the uncertainty of connection. And connection is required for thriving.
Right.
You want to go back way back in time. We hunted in packs.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
You want to talk about like archetypal masculinity. It involves being a part of a team.
Yes.
So I think that's the fundamental biggest misunderstanding. Pursuing connection, pursuing belonging, building relationships is winning at life. It is not being weak. It's not failing to live up to social standards. It is the exact opposite. It is being strong.
Yeah. Now, you know, from this conversation, before we close, what are some important factors that you would like people to walk away with from this episode?
Yeah. So first, I would like people to think and reflect on their habits and the way they live their lives. You know, if you feel disconnected, find ways that you are introducing stress, find ways that you're like numbing that disconnection.
Yeah.
And be a leader in your own life and set an example for yourself and be patient. Like patience is really important here.
Yeah.
You're not going to go from lonely to having the social life you want right away.
Right.
If you are connected, help other people find connection. Be a leader, set an example. If you're an educator, if you're a parent, you know, model the behaviors that you want.
Right. I love that. I love that. Now you have a Substack newsletter. You also have a LinkedIn that you're very active in, that you have show content in, and you have your own podcast. Can you tell us about each of those?
Sure. Yeah. So the podcasts, I like this, I interview experts, and some of them are therapists. Some of them are startup founders or professors or neuroscientists, and they all touch on human connection in different ways. You know, if what I'm talking about resonates with you, you might find the podcast interesting. The Substack is deeper research, and a lot of my perspective comes because I read a lot of like research papers, but I try to make everything like really accessible and interesting, you know? So for instance, I wrote about the impact of loneliness on politics.
Right.
For example, like people who are lonely, you could see our entire political landscape as by loneliness. Loneliness, lonely people are 6 times less likely to volunteer for non-political causes, 7 times more likely to volunteer for political causes. So our entire modern world, political polarization, all of that has to do with loneliness.
Right.
So if what I'm talking about strikes a fancy with you and you're curious, some of the stuff that I talk about gets a bit nerdy, but you know, you can always bounce around. I'm trying to increase awareness of this stuff and,
yes.
and I have no issue with people who do social media, and I think there's a lot of important messages you can put out there. I like the longer form stuff, so the Substack stuff. And then on LinkedIn, you know, if you want to follow me on LinkedIn, it's a good way to just gain little insights during your day-to-day life, you know, like where is this world going? What can you do? All of that good stuff.
And you also mentioned that you provide, you know, some services. If people want to talk to you, you know, you're there to help them.
Yeah, totally. So I do consulting, and that's more like paid consulting. If you are a company or a government who is looking to cultivate connection and improve mental health and well-being and lead whomever you care about to thriving. So I do that. And if you're a nonprofit or a government and you just want to have a casual conversation with me, totally cool too, for free. Also, if you're a parent or an educator and you're just curious about this stuff, I'm always down to have a short conversation. The way this shows up in everyone's life is different. The science is emerging, the best practices are emerging, and I would hate for people to feel like they have to navigate this space alone. So I can also connect, you know, if you're an educator, I can connect you to good resources that can help you as well. Or a parent. I mean, being a parent today is probably the hardest it's ever been.
Yeah.
You know? And I think everyone deserves to feel like they have access to support and resources. And in addition to the paid work that I do, if you just want a voice and a mirror to reflect back stuff, I'm down for that too.
I love that. Now, where can people find you?
Yeah, so my Substack is called Interface of Us. And so you can go to interfaceofus.substack.com. You can also see my podcast there. My podcast is called Connecting Beyond Apps and AI. You can access the podcast through the Substack, but there's also connectingbeyondpodcast.com. On LinkedIn, my name is Alexander Goldman. If you look up Alexander Goldman, connection researcher, hopefully I'll pop up, but I can't guarantee that. So that's the best places to connect with me. But my website is alexander-goldman.com. And there you can see more about connecting with me and contacting me directly.
I love that. I love that. Now, I just want for the listeners to know that we live in a world where we're constantly connected, but real connection is something that's completely different. And the truth is, it's not about how many people you talk to, it's about how deeply you connect. And if this episode resonated with you, make sure that you follow and share with someone who needs to hear it. Alexander, this has been wonderful. I really love that you came on the show and you talked about this subject, because it's something that's really needed. You know, we have a society that's so absorbed in electronics and technology. And I think it does make people further and further apart from each other. You know, we mentioned before the show, we were talking about how connected people were back in the day and how now with all these technologies and all this information, we're actually starting to disconnect and become further apart from people. And it's making people, you know, it's making things harder and harder for people to connect and communicate with each other. And communication is key. You need communication. We need to understand other humans. We need to understand the way they think, the way they feel. And it seems like, you know, in the direction that we're going at isn't healthy unless we bring awareness to it and maybe make some tweaks into it, you know, so it doesn't have to be an unhealthy thing. It could be a good thing if it's utilized the right way. And so, you know, you brought up a lot of great topics today and you a lot of great strategies and tools. So I just want to thank you for being on the show and bringing this, topic to awareness, because I really think people need to stop and think, especially young parents, when you have children, how much of these technologies are you letting your children be absorbed, you know, and how much are you absorbing too? Because there are a lot of people who suffer from loneliness and they suffer from related conditions due to the technology out there and being so self-absorbed in it. So
yeah,
I thank you so much.
Totally. And my final note is two things. One, first, thank you so much and great question, Stacey, and thank you for the work that you're doing. The second thing is, if you're lonely, you're lonely because your body and brain is telling you that you deserve connection and you deserve belonging.
Yes.
So everyone deserves that. We were built to belong. If you want to feel like you are, if you want to win at life, if you want to thrive, pursue connection.
Yes, I agree. I agree. This has been wonderful. Thank you so much, Alexander. I appreciate your time. And I hope you come on this show and we could talk further about this again.
Anytime. Thanks, Stacey.
You're welcome.
Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Jeff's rugby team will depart in 5 minutes from platform 15. Your ride comes with 6 toilets and a refreshments carriage that you'll empty within 5 minutes. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.